Blog Talk Radio.
Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party, raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972, because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it.
Live from Patriot Studios in Hazlett, Texas, this is Soldiers of Patriotism with your host, the chiropractor of conservatism, the madman of motivation, Michael B. Princes and princesses of patriotism. It is Sunday, July the 1st, and this is the special Ted Cruz edition. I've got my co-hosts for this afternoon, Whitney N. and Stacy M. You probably know them on Twitter as at Whitney Neal and at Stacy in Texas. A couple of good friends of mine, they're like myself, tweeting fools for Ted and conservatism in general. I'm going to be bringing them on here shortly. We are waiting for Ted to call in. He should be calling in here shortly. Folks, I'm going to go ahead and do my editorial for you today. And I've been working on this for a while. So here we go. Patriots, over the last 3 years, I have suffered a great deal of solicitude and anxiety of mind for the country I love. The country I wrote that blank check for, put on that uniform and stood on that wall for. Ready. Willing. And prepared to give my life for, has found itself in the clutches of a socialist radical that, not unlike Trotsky and Lenin, has bamboozled so many apathetic and weak-minded Americans. In that time, however, like you, I have once again started to defend my country, our country. The present condition of it, both politically and morally, presents anything but a cheering prospect to the mind of either the patriot or the philanthropist. The only possible consolation we have is that which changed the mind of the father of our country in the darkest hour of the American Revolution. When sitting at midnight on the banks of the frozen Delaware on that memorable night of the 25th of December, one of his officers remarked that the prospect before them was a gloomy one. Yes, sir, said the hero, but we have this consolation. The darkest hour of night is great before the dawn of day. This may be, and I pray heaven, is our own condition at present. We certainly have reached the darkest point, and the light of regeneration may be about to dawn upon us. Ted Cruz, a principled, solid conservative in a runoff with Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, is that light of regeneration. He, along with many other noble hearts that we Tea Party conservatives have put into office across this great country of ours, will bring us out of the darkness and into the light. There is much I could tell you about Ted. Stuff that I've blogged, tweeted, and posted everywhere I can. But today, I want to tell you a personal story about Ted. A story that you'll never read about in the Washington Times or hear about on the nightly news, but a story that speaks to the character of this man, Ted Cruz. I've had the honor and privilege of meeting Ted on several occasions. I've had my picture taken with him, and so on and so forth. But one event that will forever stick in my mind is what happened on Saturday, June 10th, at our Texas State GOP convention. It was all but over, and the various campaigns and organizations were tearing down in the exhibit hall. I had taken my 11-year-old son, Quinn, on the last day to see the fourth general session. Yep, we got to see Ted as he electrified well over 3,000 Republicans, and my son, he hooted and hollered the entire time, waving his Ted Cruz wave sign. The session was called into recess, and we walked over to the exhibit hall and over to the Cruz booth. There was Ted and his lovely wife, Heidi, and all the staff and lookers-oners were about everywhere. However, Ted recognized me, acknowledged me and my son, and I asked if we might get a picture of Quinn and Ted, since I had one of he and I. Ted not only said yes, but he insisted that we take it of the three of us. Furthermore, he led us into a booth and told his staff that we needed to clear an area, for which the staff cleared the booth so that a good picture of himself, my son, and me could be taken. Quinn then asked Ted if he would autograph the wave sign from the fourth session that he held while Ted was speaking to the convention, to which Ted took Quinn, sat him down, and spoke with him at length, signed his campaign sign, and gave Quinn the words of advice that he will carry with him for a lifetime. Always stand for liberty, Ted. Always stand for liberty. You might think, what more? Well, there is more. Heidi then saw Quinn and I and spent some time with us, more than anyone could want, really. Both of them were extremely busy and didn't have to give us but a second, if that. She talked to Quinn just like Ted, told him how happy she was to see such a young man at the convention, seeing firsthand how freedom works. A father could not be more proud than I was, for I do this for my children. Ted, if you can determine yourself to undertake holding a senator's chair to help extricate our country from this complication of evils and place us in possession of the American prosperity our founders fought and died for, then the least I can do is busy myself with the necessary preparations and work to help you attain this, sir. Not unlike so many people in the grassroots movement and Tea Party, I work my normal 50 hours a week. I come home and I will willingly and gladly give you and many other conservative candidates 20 to 30 hours of my time for the same reason that you do, sir. I dare say that is, I want to leave my family a better America. I want my children and my grandchild to have the opportunity that was afforded me as a young man. And Mrs. Cruz, to you personally, I wish to say, you're a woman of strong determination, of moral compass and fortitude, envious by all. Not unlike Abigail Adams, who wrote to her husband, John, on October 25th, 1782, and said, "Yet no man liveth for himself, says an authority I will not dispute. Let me draw satisfaction from this source, and instead of murmuring and repining at my lot, consider it in a more pleasing view. Let me suppose that the same gracious being who first smiled upon our union and blessed us in each other, endowed in him, my friend, with powers and talents for the benefit of mankind." The benefit of mankind. "And gave him a willing mind to improve them for the service of his country. Ted, you, sir, are the man who can deliver us from this hydra-headed monster that we call the federal government, led by a man who is letting our ship sink in rough waters, a man who has in fact abandoned ship. I know that you have it within you to steer our ship into calmer waters and slay the beast that threatens our very way of life. And in 2013, when you're the next senator from the great Lone Star State, your laurels will be perennial and bright as those that adorn the memory of Hannibal. And just as he took his fight to Tiberius Longus at Trebia during the Second Punic War, in that same vein, you will take your fight to the entrenched cronyism of Washington, D.C. Finally, Ted, when you become the next senator of Texas, I think upon you, sir, is the responsibility to go to D.C. and be a leader among men and women. Texas is the reddest state in the Union. And as Texas goes, so does the GOP. That's my editorial, and I'm sticking to it. Let's see who we have on the line here. I see we're still waiting for Ted to call in. He should be calling in anytime. Let me go ahead and get my friends Stacy and Whitney in here. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Great. How are you doing? Great editorial.
Well, thank you very much.
Great job, as usual.
Well, I appreciate it. I try to write good editorials. My wife often accused me of getting a little evangelical. We are waiting for Ted to call in. He should be calling in any time, I hope. God knows we've been promoting this, and I did confirm with James. And I know that he knows he's coming on because he's retweeted that he's coming on. So he should be calling on any time. Whitney, why don't you take a few minutes, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then Stacy, we'll have you do the same while we're waiting for Ted.
All right. Well, I am a proud Texan, a proud conservative, a public school teacher, a mom, and I am so excited to support Ted in this endeavor and to push to get a solid, real conservative in the Senate to help his fellow conservatives fight and to fully repeal Obamacare and to represent us very, very well.
Yes, absolutely. What did you think about Thursday?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Thursday was quite an interesting day between the surprise ruling and Chief Justice Roberts, what he chose to do in his ruling, kind of read between the lines a little bit and say that Obamacare was a tax. And then, of course, the Eric Holder contempt vote, which was highly necessary, and the congressional walkout. It was quite a day.
Yeah, not to say the least. Stacy, what say you? What are your thoughts? Well, first tell us a little bit about you and I and Whitney both. We all kind of retweet and tweet and retweet one another, so we're pretty active on Twitter. I'm sure that a lot of people know who you are. They just may not. This is the first time they're going to hear your voice on the radio. It's at Stacy in Texas. She's a very avid tweeter, someone I highly recommend besides at Whitney Neal to follow. Stacy, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what were your thoughts about Thursday?
I'm just a mom here in East Texas. I'm very conservative. I most definitely focus on disinformation. I want people to focus on the record. And records matter. There's a lot of rhetoric, and rhetoric is damaging. As far as Obamacare, I was very disappointed. I recall reading one of your posts where you stated that you took an hour of sulking after Obamacare decision came down. I did the same thing. I still think it's really confusing me on what exactly we're going to do about it. But I look to people like Ted. He is very strong. I know Ted will repeal Obamacare. I know he will do what he says he will do and follow through. He's not going to compromise and reach across the aisle. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yes. Well, and we, of course, have our I'm sorry, guys, I'm having a problem with my keyboard here. It's because my numbers lock went off. 718-305-7176, by the way, is the call-in line for anybody out there as soon as we can take phone calls. So we have our runoff on the 31st of July. Stacy, you were posting online this morning a little bit about our runoff, about absentee balloting and whatnot. Care to give us a little bit of information on that?
Okay, it's not called absentee voting or a ballot anymore. They're calling it just a ballot by mail. And you can go if you, for some reason, within the, there's four different reasons why, you would be able to be eligible to vote through mail. If you're going to be away, if you're sick or disabled, 65 or older, or you're in jail, you can go to votetexas.org, that's www.votetexas.org, and apply for a mail-in ballot. I believe it needs to be received, the request for same needs to be in no later received in their office, hot little hands, by July 24th. And the ballot that you receive in the mail needs to be received by the early voting clerk no later than 7 o'clock p.m. on July 31st. Early voting dates are July 23rd through the 27th. And if you have any questions as to location, you should be able to obtain that information also at www.votetexas.gov.
Right. And I know that I'm going to be an elections judge myself on the 31st, so I need to actually try to get in and do my early voting as soon as early voting opens up, because I guess I can do it. I did it on the day that on the 29th I voted at the polls, but it, you know, I had to wait till the end there and whatnot to do it. But it would be a lot easier if you're a judge, an elections judge, to get – and hang on one second. I believe we might have the call that we're waiting on. Area code 713. Solicitor General Cruz, is that you?
It is. It's great to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Ted, if you don't mind,
sure, we've spoken
before. What an honor to have you on with us. Ladies and gentlemen, former Solicitor General of the Great Lone Star State, Ted Cruz, is on the line with us. Ted, I did an outstanding editorial. I think you've probably already read it. It's called I Support Ted Cruz.
Sure, thank you for that.
Well, you know, I believe in you, sir. And by the way, I have two very strong supporters on, both of whom I believe you know. I have Whitney Neal from Denton County on with us. And
hey,
Whitney. Stacey.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous.
And I have Stacy on from out in East Texas, who you've probably seen. I know you've seen her on Twitter as Stacy in Texas.
Yeah, well, look, hey, Stace, and the two of you all talk about dominating Twitter. You're both fantastic, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Proud to do it.
I follow the Twitter feed on my iPhone, and both of your tweets bring a smile to me on a daily basis. You guys are fighting the good fight every day, and thank you for that.
Well, Ted, I know that you're short of time, and I know that you have a show after this one, so let's jump right into it, and at your convenience, I don't have a question for the honor is just having you on and getting to do the editorial that I wrote on behalf of you and Heidi, but I did want to see if you would give us a little bit of an opinion in layman's terms as to exactly what happened on Thursday, perhaps, and
sure.
how Liberty has been badly hurt.
Yep.
And then both Stacy and Whitney both have one question for you that,
sure.
You know, we all know about the stuff that we hear on the commercials and everything, Ted. I think it's important that people get to know a little bit about what we already know about you here in Texas. So with that, go ahead.
Well, the Obamacare decision last week was a sad, sad day for Liberty. The U.S. Supreme Court, unfortunately, abdicated its responsibility to safeguard the Constitution, and it rewrote Obamacare in an attempt to save the statute. That was wrong, and it was tragic. But I'll tell you, I think the long-term consequences are going to be quite encouraging, because the instant that happened, Americans all over this country realized that the battle for the fate of Obamacare has moved to the halls of Congress, and it's moved to the ballot box. And that decision on Thursday was like throwing gasoline into a fire. The conservative great awakening that is sweeping this country, that decision only energized and inflamed it. I have to tell you, in the 76 hours since the decision, we had over 1,300 contributions come in online to the campaign. Literally within a couple of minutes of the decision coming down, our phones lit up like a Christmas tree, and we started getting contributions from all over Texas and from all over the country coming in every 10, 20, 30 seconds. And the reason is simple. This decision highlighted how incredibly important this July 31st runoff in the Senate race is, because the fate of Obamacare now will not be decided by the courts. It will not be decided by the judges. It will be decided in Congress, and the Senate's going to be the battlefield. And the central question in this runoff in Texas on July 31st is whether we have a go-along-to-get-along establishment politician in the Senate who is almost certain to cut a deal with Democrats and with squishy Republicans, or whether the next senator from Texas is a strong conservative and a fighter. And I'll tell you, Michael, I intend to lead the fight to repeal every syllable of every word of Obamacare. I think people, that decision, that statute is terrible policy, and it was arrogantly jammed down the throats of the American people. And I think as a consequence of the decision Thursday, we are seeing people energized and ready to take our country back. I think we are going to see July 31st and then November 2012 look a great deal like November 2010, a great conservative Tea Party uprising all over this country.
Yeah, I think Thursday, Ted, I think that Thursday, the Tea Party movement was already huge, as you well know. I mean, you're our guy. You know how we feel about you.
Thank you.
I think Thursday invigorated and probably helped the Tea Party to grow beyond lengths that anybody could possibly imagine. And I think the fruits of our labor will be seen on the 31st, as well as in the first Tuesday in November. Ted, I'm curious real quickly, and I know that you're short on time, but with the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go into Roberts and all of that. That's for another day. With him coming out now and saying that it is a tax, I've been giving this some thought. You're my mentor in regards to the legalities of all of this, and that's why we want to send you there. If I'm understanding correctly, this now would take us into reconciliation where we would only need 51 votes to overturn this monstrosity.
Right.
And also my question, Ted, is because it was sold as a Commerce Clause issue and not a tax, since we were sold a bill of goods in – is there any way to review this in now that, well, now, no, it is a tax, so it has to be reviewed, or is it just kind of up in the air, the Congress can do it if they won't or not?
Well, I think it's going to come down to the political fight. If the Democrats keep control of the Senate, or if, God forbid, Obama remains president, they will be very effective in stifling the effort to repeal Obamacare. In order for Obamacare to be repealed, three things have to happen. Number one, most critically, we have to defeat Obama in November 2012. I believe we're going to do that. Number two, it is critical that Harry Reid not be majority leader anymore, that there be a Republican majority in the Senate. But number three, what I think is absolutely vital, is we take – right now there are six or seven strong constitutional conservatives in the Senate. They are outnumbered. The five strongest, in my opinion, are Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Pat Toomey, and Tom Coburn. And as you know, I'm the only candidate in the country who all five of them have supported.
Absolutely.
If we can double the number of strong constitutional conservatives in 2012, if we can grow it from six or seven to 10 or 12 or 15, it'll transform the Senate, because what we need is a critical mass. And I agree with you. This is a tax. It means it can be repealed under reconciliation, which means we just need 51 votes. And more fundamentally, look, the Democrats passed it under reconciliation with 51 votes, so we can absolutely repeal it with 51 votes as well.
Well, that is really good news. Ted, if we may, I'd like to bring in Whitney now. She has a very good question for you, and then after that, and you respond and
sure.
Speak to it how you want, then I'd like Stacy has a good one for you. So, Whitney, please.
Okay, thank you. First of all, you did a great job yesterday in Rockwall. It
thank
was
an
honor to see you there, and the crowd, I think, really responded to you, which was awesome.
It was a fantastic gathering.
It was. It was great. And what I want to do is give you kind of just an opportunity to talk education a little bit and school choice,
uh-huh.
because I think a lot of the other issues we've heard about, but there hasn't been as much attention on education. And I know for a lot of women, female voters here in Texas, that's going to be something that they pay attention to.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I know you care about what education your children are getting and where those mandates are coming from and how they affect, you know, your kids as well as the rest of us. And so I just want to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about that.
I am very, very happy to talk about that. Let me say a couple of things on education. Number one, my first priority with respect to education in Washington is going to be to abolish the Federal Department of Education. That is important from a budget perspective, but it's even more important from the perspective of education itself. Education is way too important for it to be governed by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Education should be at the state level, or even better, at the local level, where parents, we can have direct control and influence over the education of our kids. And right now we see education throughout this country strangled with red tape and regulations from the Department of Education that we have virtually no influence on, and I want to eliminate that altogether. Now, secondly, you asked about school choice. As you know, school choice has been an issue that has been a passion of mine for over a decade. In the late 1990s, I served as the chairman of the School Choice and Education Reform Committee for the Federalist Society, and we hosted a national conference in Ohio on school choice, where we brought in some of the leading advocates and opponents of school choice to debate the issues. And for me, school choice is fundamentally a question of fairness and of acting to save our kids. You know, unfortunately, many education decisions right now are driven by the adults. They're driven by a great many people in the system, by, unfortunately, the teachers' unions and the union bosses, and by the bureaucrats in government, rather than focusing on what we should be caring about, which is making sure every child in America receives a good education and has the opportunity to work towards the American dream. I mean, education is the pathway to success in this country, and it is also the key to every other problem. If you think of all of the different social challenges we face, whether it's healthcare, whether it's poverty, whether it's crime, if a child gets an education, those issues often will take care of themselves, or they'll at least be much, much better off. And if a child doesn't get an education, each of those issues will follow like night follows day. And right now, tragically, for a great many kids, particularly for minority kids, for Hispanic kids, for African-American kids in the inner cities, we have schools that are tragically failing them. You know, I'll tell you a statistic in Cleveland, Whitney, that just was horrifying. Cleveland, a few years back, before they enacted a choice program, a student entering high school in the Cleveland Public Schools was statistically more likely to be victim of a violent crime at school than he or she was likely to graduate on time in 4 years. I mean, that's just horrifying. That's a system that is not working. And the advantage of school choice is it empowers parents and students. It gives those with limited means the same choice that the rich and middle class have always had. And the purpose of school choice fundamentally is to both save those kids and empower those kids, but it's also to transform and save the public school system by introducing competition in schools that right now are insulated from competition. Because consistently, whether it's education or any other field, when you have competition, it improves quality and improves services. And we need to have the urgency of saving these kids today. It's an issue that's been a passion of mine. I've been outspoken on for well over a decade and intend to continue to lead vigorously on this issue.
Thank you. This is actually one of the things that first drew me to you was learning more about your passion for education and for school choice. And I love to hear the passion from an elected official not to, you know, build relationships with groups like Pearson, which we've seen a lot here in Texas with their $500 million
yep,
contract
yep.
to test our kids into obscurity over the next few years versus what's good for the actual kids and for the future of the country. So thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Whitney. And you know what Whitney asked you, and what you just said, Ted. It kind of when you know, this is a good example, be it healthcare, education, whatever it is. Anytime the government gets their greedy little hands in it, it goes bad.
That's exactly right.
Stacy.
And if we can empower citizens, consumers, students, parents, it's always better to empower the individual rather than some bureaucrat in Washington.
Well, and it's what's made our country great and successful. And
exactly.
But let's pull Stacy in here if we could now, please, Ted. I know, and because I know that you're getting short of time. You've got another show to do.
Yeah, I've got another show in just a couple of minutes, so but we'll try and knock this out quickly.
Very well. Stacy, come on in here.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, Stacy.
Yesterday, I know you couldn't be in two places at once. There was a big Tea Party rally here in East Texas, and a lot of awesome response for you, for your booth, and they're not fine. Anyway, one of the major questions that was asked about for you, they wanted to know about you, was what you would do to ensure that only constitutional justices are chosen for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's a critical question. Let me say briefly, you mentioned you all ran out of signs. I'm going to just do a digression for a second. We've actually had that problem all over the state. We keep printing signs and running out, which is a wonderful problem to have in a campaign. I will mention to anyone listening, if you want a sign, you can go to the website tedcruz.org and you can order the sign directly online. It'll be shipped straight to your home. We're printing them as fast as we can, but anyone who wants a sign, you can get it online at tedcruz.org straight to your house. Moving to the question, look, you know, just about every major issue facing our society ends up in the courts, and unfortunately, activist courts in the past several decades have undermined the Constitution, have threatened our liberty. As you know, I began my career as a law clerk to Chief Justice William Rehnquist on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was an extraordinary friend and mentor. He was a remarkable justice. He spent 34 years on the court battling against judicial activism and standing up for the proposition that it's a judge's job to follow the Constitution and not to impose their own policy from the bench. I was honored many years later when the Chief Justice passed away to serve as a pallbearer at his funeral. And as you know, I have spent a lifetime fighting to defend the Constitution and fighting primarily before the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the Constitution. And the Constitution explicitly gives the Senate the responsibility to advise and consent on judicial nominations. And I can tell you there's no responsibility I will take more seriously in the U.S. Senate than that responsibility. Right now, you have a number of senators who basically play this silly kabuki dance with judicial nominees, where the senator leans forward and says, "Judge, will you promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench?" And the judge leans forward and says, "Yes, Senator, I will promise to follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench." And they say, "That is all." And they don't have the experience, they don't have the background in constitutional issues to press further and really delve in. And I intend to press as hard as possible to get to the bottom of any judicial nominee and to ensure and fight relentlessly against confirming any judge who would be a judicial activist, who would undermine the Constitution, who would do anything but faithfully apply the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States.
Does that answer your question, Stacy?
Certainly.
Great.
Okay, terrific. I'm sorry I've got to run, but I'm actually now late for the next radio show. But thank you for everything you guys are doing. You're spreading the flame of liberty, and we are taking our country back starting July 31st and then in November.
Good day to you. Give your dad a big howdy. I really respect that man, and thank you very much for your time, Ted. We're here for you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies, wow. I think that's all I know to say right at the moment. I mean, I've had some good guests on my show. I've had some great co-hosts on my show. But to have you two with Ted on the show today, the 1st of July, going into the 236th year of our country, on this Wednesday, or should I say, what's left of our country? Because I'm, you know, I've been accused of maybe exaggerating by folks. I don't think it's an exaggeration. Liberty was harmed on Thursday. Our freedoms were harmed on Thursday. What do y'all have to say? Let's start with you, Stacey.
I agree. Thursday, I'm still depressed over it. I can't help it. That focus in my mind needs to be on people that can protect our liberty, and one only needs to vet his record, and you can see that he has had a lifetime of fighting for our Constitution, and that's where we need to start.
Ted's resume, you know, let's just compare resumes, Whitney and Stacey, and then we'll bring in some other folks. Take a look at the resume of the community organizer who's never worked a day in his life in the quote-unquote real world. And I don't know a better – not that he doesn't, you know. Working in education, that's great and it's honorable. Working at a college, that's great and that's honorable. Short of that, all he ever did was go to school or was a community organizer. The man had a paper-thin resume – with a media that refused to vet him with the same vigor that they vetted Sarah Palin. And here you contrast that to a man like Ted Cruz, who I've spoken to Raphael, as you both have, on several occasions. You would not find a man – we're all proud of our children. Raphael – folks, and Whitney and Stacey, y'all help me out here. Raphael came – he fought – with Castro against Bastilla during the Cuban Revolution, only to find out that the words, and I'm not kidding you, I kid you not, this is quoting Rafael Cruz, the words that he was told by Castro in the 50s were hope and change. Hope and change. And he fled that country. He fled before Castro actually got in. His aunt left after Castro got in because that hope and change turned out to be something other than what it had been preached to be, just like we're finding out now. Right, Whitney?
Absolutely. And yeah, I think the tragedy of it all is that we have these examples from around the world. We have Raphael. We have people who tell us this, who teach us, you know, this isn't the first time this game has been played. You know, we're a repeat performance, and we're falling for it hook, line, and sinker. And I think it's so important that people wake up and listen when they're afforded these opportunities to hear from someone like Raphael, who speaks eloquently on his life experience and what he sees happening here, and his confidence and passion in his son, Ted, to fight to stop this in our own country. I think it's so key that people take the time to listen and soak it all in.
Well, you know, Raphael told me, and he was probably more or less quoting Ronald Reagan, but he, you know, during the convention we were up at that thing, Whitney, and I was chatting with Raphael, and there was a family there that with their young child, who was probably about 15, and I'd already heard the story, and I didn't know these people. And I said, Raphael, we've got this young man standing here that's probably in high school. I would give anything, not only because I want to hear it again because it motivates me, but because I want this young man to understand exactly the road we're going down. I mean, he's obviously his parents are a supporter of your son. I said, but please tell him the story about coming here from Cuba and hearing the words hope and change. And this man, he came here with $100 sewn in his underwear. He came to Austin, Texas in, what, 59 or something like that, and became a successful person based on our free market principles, on the ability to be either a failure or a success. And he told this young guy, and he told the crowd that was standing around him, he said, where are we going to go? Would we lose our freedom here? Stacey, what do you think?
I'm sorry. There's something going out here. Yes, Raphael has the most compelling story. And I think the biggest, most important thing that seems to drive him, or at least from listening to him and listening to Ted talk about it, is that, you know, where would he go if it wasn't for America? Where would he be able to go for freedom other than America? And after the latest decisions, it starts to make the question, or at least it does for me, for the sake of my children, what direction is America going on now? Are we going back to replay the past, like the hope and change, or are we staying on the freedom path?
What my greatest fear, this is my greatest fear, and fortunately my son, all of my children, I'm teaching, they tend to be conservative like me, and now my wife, who has finally come over from the dark side and understands that, you know, a vote does matter. Voting does matter. There are those that say, why go bother? What the hell? It doesn't ever change. In some respects, I understand the cynicism. But here's the problem. Voting does matter. And if it didn't, look at the extraordinary amount of change that we have had since 2008 when 52% of America voted for one man. I mean, this man has usurped the Constitution. He's called the Senate into recess when it wasn't, so that he could make appointees that he had no constitutional authority to make. He's appointed czars. We have more unelected officials in charge of our daily lives now. We have an EPA that's out of control. We now have this monstrosity Obama tax, which we used to call Obamacare, the largest tax ever in the history of the United States. And I'm not going to go into details about whom it was, but what scares me the most of these young people, the question that was posed to me, what does it matter to you? You've got health insurance. Well, yeah, I do have health insurance, and my premiums are going up. That takes food out of my kids' mouths. Somebody has to pay for this crap. It doesn't grow on a tree. It doesn't come out of thin air. There's a finite amount of money. One person gets this for free, that means somebody else had to pay for it. And when you have no constraints on a Congress or an executive branch that will go out there and do whatever they want and then put it on top of 50% or less of Americans who do get up. You know, I listened to the news I listened to the talk shows this morning, and they want to talk about, well, you know, the free riders, the quote-unquote free riders, the people that don't get health insurance that end up having a catastrophic accident, and then they don't have the money to pay for it. Well, but they never talk about the free riders who are on food stamps and welfare. Now, granted, not that we're not compassionate people. There are people out there that need our help. But this is a society. We've got a government now that is promoting having food stamp parties. Did y'all see that on the news?
Yeah, I did see that.
I mean, they are promoting entitlements. And we have young people that think they're entitled to free birth control pills, for crying out loud. Where is the mentality that I was born with and people of my age or older, or folks like you that are younger than me but that understand you've got to get up and work for something in life? You can't be – go ahead.
So I would say I think that part of your answer to that question came from Ted's answer about these issues come from education. And when you have a public school system where we are, you know – don't want to go into a full another topic, but where we have the numbers that we do in our free and reduced lunch programs, where those lead to, there are children who legitimately deserve these programs, but we have a bloated system. And in our classrooms, when we have curriculum and systems in place that don't teach kids to think or expect them to think, where we just spoon feed them information, and it's, you know, top down, we know where these curriculum things come from. And, you know, we're growing them in our classrooms. We're taking responsibility away from parents and handing it to
to government-run systems. They're saying, don't you worry about it. We'll take care of your kids. And you're developing this from the ground up. And so when you rate generations and generations in these systems where everyone gets a ribbon for participating, and, you know, we've seen districts in Texas where they're eliminating the honor roll and honor roll ceremonies because it makes the kids who didn't make the honor roll feel bad. It's all over the place. But I think it starts there with our kids and how we're raising our children to, you know, either expect to make a life for themselves or have some sort of life handed to them.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Stacey.
I totally agree. I totally agree with everything she just said. I recall my oldest son came home from school one day and told me how his teacher informed him that he had a right to a job, and he had a right to be provided a vehicle to get him to that job. And I sat there thinking, where did these people come from? They would tell our children that, essentially, you don't have to work for anything. And no wonder we have this entitlement mentality, because that's exactly what Whitney said. It is the problem, I think, begins in school.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, ladies, let's take about I want to get this in because it is the subject of today. We just had Ted on and we talked about it. It's about 4 minutes. I want us to take a listen to what Mitt Romney had to say, because whether we like Mitt Romney or not, he is our nominee, and I have resisted actively campaigning for Mitt since Rick suspended. Thursday, that changed. Not because I all of a sudden found love for Mitt, but I all of a sudden, it became more clear to me than ever. If we do not replace this president, if we do not get Ted Cruz elected, if we do not get Zach Poskovich in to replace Bob Corker, if we do not do a lot of things across the board, freedom is going to erode further than it already has. So let's play this real quick, then we'll come back out of this 4 minute, 13 second segment, and we'll pull in Aaron and some other folks that are on hold. Okay, ladies?
Sounds great.
Okay, hang tight.
You might imagine, I disagree with the Supreme Court's decision, and I agree with the dissent. What the court did not do on its last day in session, I will do on my first day if elected president of the United States. And that is, I will act to repeal Obamacare. Well, let's make clear that we understand what the court did and did not do. What the court did today was say that Obamacare does not violate the Constitution. What they did not do was say that Obamacare is good law or that it's good policy. Obamacare was bad policy yesterday. It's bad policy today. Obamacare was bad law yesterday. It's bad law today. Let me tell you why I say that. Obamacare raises taxes on the American people by approximately $500 billion. Obamacare cuts Medicare by approximately $500 billion. And even with those cuts and tax increases, Obamacare adds trillions to our deficits and to our national debt and pushes those obligations on to coming generations. Obamacare also means that for up to 20 million Americans, they will lose the insurance they currently have, the insurance that they like and they want to keep. Obamacare is a job killer. Businesses across the country have been asked what the impact is of Obamacare. Three-quarters of those surveyed by the Chamber of Commerce said Obamacare makes it less likely for them to hire people. And perhaps most troubling of all, Obamacare puts the federal government between you and your doctor. For all those reasons, it's important for us to repeal and replace Obamacare. What are some of the things that we'll keep in place and must be in place in a reform, a real reform of our health care system? One, we have to make sure that people who want to keep their current insurance will be able to do so. Having 20 million people, up to that number of people, lose the insurance they want is simply unacceptable. Number two, got to make sure that those people who have pre-existing conditions know that they will be able to be insured and they will not lose their insurance. We also have to assure that we do our very best to help each state in their effort to assure that every American has access to affordable health care. And something that Obamacare does not do that must be done in real reform is helping lower the cost of health care and health insurance. It's becoming prohibitively expensive. And so this is now a time for the American people to make a choice. You can choose whether you want to have a larger and larger government, more and more intrusive in your life, separating you and your doctor, whether you're comfortable with more deficits, higher debt that we pass on to the coming generations, whether you're willing to have the government put in place a plan that potentially causes you to lose the insurance that you like, or whether instead you want to return to a time when the American people will have their own choice in health care, where consumers will be able to make their choices as to what kind of health insurance they want. This is a time of choice for the American people. Our mission is clear. If we want to get rid of Obamacare, we're going to have to replace President Obama. My mission is to make sure we do exactly that, that we return to the American people the privilege they've always had to live their lives in the way they feel most appropriate, where we don't pass on to coming generations massive deficits and debt, where we don't have a setting where jobs are lost. If we want good jobs and a bright economic future for ourselves and for our kids, we must replace Obamacare. That is my mission, that is our work, and I'm asking the people of America to join me. If you don't want the course that President Obama has put us on, if you want instead a course that the founders envisioned, then join me in this effort. Help us. Help us defeat Obamacare. Help us defeat the liberal agenda that makes government too big, too intrusive, and that's killing jobs across this great country. Thank you so much.
I think the volume on that was down low. I was looking at the chat board. Sorry about that, Tweet. But I think we all probably heard it. I'm opening up the mics now. I've got Stacy and Whitney back, my co-host for the day, my special co-host for the day. That's Stacy in Texas, at Stacy in Texas on Twitter. I highly recommend you follow her, as well as at Whitney Neal, and, of course, myself, which is at Cons Nation Radio. Us, along with lots of other people from across this country of ours, including some folks that I have on the line here with us. Brother Schaus, are you there? Brother Schaus? Okay, Brother Schaus is not there. Ladies, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Kurt, you there, buddy?
I'm here, Michael.
All right, Kurt. And Aaron, let's go ahead and bring Aaron in. Aaron had a question. And Aaron, I didn't ask Ted specifically a question because I think he answered it. Your question was something to the effect, if we do not get rid of Obama, how will Ted why don't you phrase your question? Because I thought I heard the answer in there. He was very specific, and he said that he will be a leader and he will stand against, along with the other – the answer to your question, I think, was the five. You've got Jim DeMint, Pat Toomey, Senator Lee, Rand Paul, and then the other one escapes me right at the moment. But by increasing those numbers of Tea Party conservatives, we're going to better able our chances to stand against either Barack Obama or possibly even if we – look, we all, I think, agree we've got to get Mitt Romney in, anybody but Obama. But we can never forget we might very well have to hold Governor Romney's feet to the fire. We need to have strong conservatives like the five we mentioned, along with Ted Cruz and Rubio, and we need to get a Zach Poskovich in there to replace Bob Corker. I mean, if we can increase the numbers in the Senate along with what we've already got in the House, I think we can stop the tide of these rhinos and these soft Democrats and moderate Democrats. So did that answer your question in his saying that? Did that answer your question, Aaron?
Yeah, it did. I mean, my big frustration, and I think it's the frustration of a lot of conservatives, is we had the largest victory in the history of Congress 2 years ago, and it doesn't seem like anything's changed because established Republicans still rule the day. And, I mean, I would add to your list Josh Mandel in Ohio and Stenberg in Nebraska. I mean, you know,
and Murdoch
these
now.
Numbers don't, and Murdoch, yes, sir, and Murdoch in Indiana, you know, increasing these numbers. So we have people who are prepared to stand up to a new president of their own party and say, you know, we're not spending anymore, and balancing the budget in 10 years is not acceptable. And or if, you know, God forbid Obama is reelected, you know, we're not funding Obamacare anymore. You know, the thing that frustrates me the most is we've had a trillion dollar, I mean, it often doesn't get mentioned, is for the past 3 years we've had $1 trillion stimuluses every single year. And the reason people don't seem to know this, the reason we've had them every single year is because, and the reason the Democrats haven't offered a budget in the Senate is because they're happy to go along, because the stimulus is built into the baseline now. And so, you know, every year we've been spending another extra emergency, you know, quote-unquote emergency $1 trillion. And, you know, that kind of stuff's got to stop. And we have to have real actual spending cuts, not just cuts in pre-approved growth. I mean, real actual physical cuts.
No, yeah. There's a lot of stuff needs to be. And speaking of budgets, Aaron, you know, let us not forget, it's the Democrat-controlled Senate who has not passed a budget that they're required to do yearly by law in over 1,000 days.
Yes.
Stacy and Whitney, you there, ladies? You want to jump into what Aaron just said?
I think Aaron put it really, really well. I mean, I agree with you guys 100%.
Well, let's pull in here from Paris, Tennessee, my buddy Kurt Blackwood, who is a very strong supporter. Well, he's been helping us with TED, but he's in the great state of Tennessee, and he is supporting a gentleman by the name of Zach Poskovich. And I wanted to tie this together after the Ted Cruz interview with many TED supporters that are listening to this show and in the chat, the various chat rooms across the Internet now at Own the Narrative, traditionalamericanmovement.com, as well as my chat room. I wanted to pull in because we have our runoff on the 31st. Tennessee has theirs on the 2nd. And we all know who Bob Corker is. Anybody that listens to Mark Levin knows that Mark Levin calls Bob Corker the damn weasel. And he is. He's a go-along, get-along kind of rhino. So let's pull in Kurt here. First of all, Kurt, what did you think about the interview with Ted? Do you have any words of wisdom to impart on us? And then tell us what's going on in Tennessee.
Okay, I don't know about words of wisdom, Michael, but I was happy and pleased to hear Ted Cruz on your show. I admit that I don't know that much about him. I've been too engrossed in Tennessee politics up here to take a lot of time, you know, to pay attention to other states. That's my bad, okay? But Ted Cruz is on my radar now, and I just hope that this guy comes through, because I believe, you know, with people like you and the young ladies that I've heard on here today and on the past weeks on here supporting Ted, I know you're doing this for a reason, and a good reason. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So I'm just, you know, my heart's with Ted Cruz down there in Texas. That's that T for Texas, T for Tennessee connection again, brother.
You know it.
As for what's going on up here in Tennessee, there's a lot happening. I had a really interesting day yesterday. We started off the day with a 8th District Tea Party Coalition meeting, and we got a lot of good work done, and we're looking at state representative races here in Tennessee. We're promoting Lieutenant Colonel, when my mind just went blank, Courtney Rogers over in District 45, just north of Nashville, to take out Deborah Maggard, one leg of the three-legged stool in Nashville that consists of Haslam, Maggard, and Harwell. And I believe that the Colonel Rogers is going to take her out. She's a national hero, folks. Look up Lieutenant Colonel Courtney Rogers and read her bio. We don't have time to talk about it here. But then I was on down towards Memphis and then out to Somerville, Tennessee for a Republican fundraiser last night, and I was really amazed. I heard things that brightened my evening, and I heard things that that bothered me somewhat. The thing that bothered me is I met so many people when I asked them, I said, have you studied the voting record of your senators and your congressmen? And so many of them said, not really. And this bothered me. The good news is that I didn't have to tell them very much until they said, oh, I didn't know that. And we're getting good response down there, really good response. And I met some interesting people. I met a gentleman who, I'm not going to give his name now because I'm hoping that that this gentleman will get active. I told him right then and there, I said, you know what? I said, I'd like to take you home with me. I'd like to put you into the pulpit of my church and let you talk to our congregation. Because this man, he's a double MBA, retired from business, and he was preaching the story, folks, just exactly like it is. I mean, the man is brilliant. And he said his wife would tell him sometimes, be quiet, don't talk so much. I told her, ma'am, please, don't shush him up. Let him go. Encourage him. Feed him good and turn him loose. And he knows where it's coming from. And I begged him to put his message out there in front of the public. What he'll do about it, I don't know. But the bottom line is I met some great folks down there last night who gave me a lot of encouragement about Zach's campaign. And as a matter of fact, we're going back. We're going to be back down there on the 12th of July for certain, maybe the 11th and the 12th. And then I plan on being back in Fayette County on the 28th of July. And so good things are happening. So now I'm gonna be quiet and let somebody else get in here, okay?
Well, I know that donations are up for Zach in Tennessee. I did get a message from him the other day. Did you go to the dinner with Melissa and Bing and those guys at the Davy Crockett Dinner Theater? Did you get a chance to go to that, Kurt?
I did not get to go over to that. I was otherwise occupied over here, Michael.
Well, maybe maybe Bing or Melissa will call in and give us an update on that. Melissa, if you're listening, or Bing, if you're listening, you want to call in and give us an update on the Zach Poskovich Tea Party conservative movement there in Tennessee. Would love to have you on just to kind of tie this, put a nice little bow around this Tea Party talk that we're having today with Ted Cruz and my other passion, which is Zach Poskovich. And, you know, guys, this last week I was kind of slacking a little bit on Twitter, but I'll be back on this week. I just kind of had to take a little break, clear my head a little bit. Kurt, you did mention something about a Republican meeting that you went to. I just do, for those folks in Tarrant County that are listening right now or the surrounding area, we are having a meeting this Friday at 7 p.m. It's Crank Up the Volume. You can find it. Just go to my Facebook page or my wall. If not, shoot me an email or PM me. I'll give you the details. My buddy Adrian Murray's putting it on. It's going to be all Tea Party 912 and Liberty activists. It'll be down at his shop, and which is close to downtown. We've got some stuff to discuss. There's going to be a lot of patriots down there, all the grassroots leaders, I venture to say, and activists. There's going to be a lot of folks. So not only will you get a chance to meet folks that you deal with probably on Twitter and Facebook and on this show and other shows and whatnot, or via email through all of the communications that we do with one another. God knows that we do a lot of them. This will give you an opportunity to actually, if you've not already met them, meet them. Again, that is a Tea Party 912 and Liberty Activist Leaders and Activists meeting at 7 p.m. on the 5th of July. Crank up the volume. Let me go ahead and pull Stacy and Whitney back in here. Guys, you want to interject anything real quick? And we'll move this right along.
Well, I think just to echo what everybody else has said, how when we listened to Romney speak earlier when he played his speech, one of the things I thought was interesting was he talked about how do we put the nation on the right track, how do we get rid of Obamacare, it's to make sure and vote out Obama, but the key thing is also to vote true conservatives, real fighters into Congress, into the House and Senate, and that's been the message of your last few callers. We can't just take the White House, we have to have the votes in Congress, and they can't be candidates that are going to fall victim or prey to special interests, who are going to go back and, basically live up to the D.C. status quo. They have to be different. And I love that the message is spreading around the country, and we're seeing more people realize it. And I hope that, you know, all of this energy is directed not just at defeating Obama, which is key, but also to those House and Senate races.
Absolutely. Stacey?
I agree. One of the major things that I'm concerned about is the vetting of candidates. We have a lot of ads or rhetoric stated, and if people will just check out the record, they're there. All you have to do is check it online. Everything that they say they're going to do, hold them accountable for what they say. Expect out of them more. Expect more out of them. And check it and make sure you understand. I remember back then, before Obama, when he was running, and they were talking about how the liberals would say that they expected all of us voters to just sit back and believe everything that's coming up on that screen and that television set. And that we're just supposed to believe that this person's going to do this and this person did that. Instead of blindly believing, look, vet, find out, learn, and make an informed choice.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I was chatting with my brother-in-law, who lives up in Ohio now, by the way, and with my baby sister, who's now retired from the Air Force. And we were chatting one day, and was talking about a presentation that I'm going to be giving to the White Rock Tea Party group on the 9th of July on social media. And he made a very good point that I had forgotten about in social media. And to what you're saying, Stacey, you know, the mainstream media is failing to do their job. They did not vet this candidate. They did not vet candidate Obama in 08. They totally dismissed. Yes, there was a little bit of chat about it. Mostly it was to dismiss anything that was said on Fox about any past that Obama had. I mean, this man literally flew in on the thinnest of resumes with no past. In 08, what did anybody know about this man before he became candidate Obama? Nothing. You knew nothing about him. You knew nothing about him while he was running against Hillary. Even Hillary Clinton tried to point this out. Even Hillary, their own
party. What's interesting there is how the media and the liberal-run media was able to shift the entire focus away from him and onto Sarah Palin in such a directed and hateful way, and people let them. You know, the media didn't vet him. They vetted her. They made her the issue and her the focus, and she became the scapegoat for the entire cycle. And it was seamless for them. They didn't face any pushback. It was crazy.
Oh, I know. And, you know, I mean, the vile and hateful things, I still hear it to this day by certain people. I mean, they can't just say they dislike her. It's the manner in which they say it, and it's so vile. I mean, I've never known a woman that is so hated who really did nothing more but try to serve her country. Was she prepared? I don't know. That's up for debate. You know, I'm glad she's not running this time around. I like her as a leader within the Tea Party movement. I think she's too controversial. But what they did to her in 08 is despicable. And especially when you compare it to the lack of what they did to Obama. And Hillary, I will merely cite my opponent's own person, Hillary Clinton, who was on the bad side of Barack Obama. Yeah, became her guy. And I understand primary fights. We just went through one ourselves. And that's why so many of us conservatives, and I'll speak for myself, somewhat for Whitney. Stacey, I don't know where you stood on POTUS, but I know where Whitney and I stood. I know who we worked our butts off for in the POTUS, who she worked for her butt off for and who I worked mine off for. We're like-minded individuals. And this is – Mitt Romney has been a hard pill for us to swallow, hasn't it, Whitney?
You have no idea. Well, you do have an idea, but yes, very hard pill to swallow. Yes.
But we both understand. But I think we both – the point I'm trying to make is, yeah, we had our primary fight, and I will speak for myself. Everything I said about Mitt Romney, I still believe. I still believe he's a flip-flopper. I still think we're going to have a hard time battling against this Obama tax, because of what he passed in Massachusetts. The only difference is that he did it at a state level, and that's where it's allowed to be done. Whether I agree with it or not, it was done at the state level as opposed to the national level, and that's the difference. And now we're going to have to fight and drive home that fact that we may not have agreed with what he did at the state level, but that is what our founding fathers enabled our states to do. What Barack Obama did is totally outside the limits of the Constitution.
You're correct. And, you know, I agree with you as well. It's Mitt Romney is going to be a challenge for us. And I think that what happened Thursday helps him as long as he and his team handle it correctly and frame the debate in a correct way that deflects any, you know, reflection on his own plan and does do exactly what you said, focuses on that he did it at the state level. And what also needs to be reminded to the American people is that when our founders set up our Constitution, any major fundamental changes were to be done through the amendment process, not through reconciliation in Congress and through, you know. So there have been some very significant things that Obama is putting out there and what he's done that should have been in the hands of the people at the state level, and as long as we focus on that, I think we'll be okay.
You know, I was just looking at the chat board. Someone, Flycatch, is saying vote for Gary Johnson if you won't change. You know, what little I know about Gary Johnson, he's a great libertarian guy. He's got some things that I agree with, but here's the bottom line. Whether it's Ross Perot, whether it's Gary Johnson, whether it's whoever the Conservative Party's candidate is, who I don't even know who it is, unfortunately, guys, I admire – and look, I'm not telling you not to vote for your guy. You want to vote third party? I served so that you could do that, along with a lot of other folks, my sister and my brother-in-law and my nephews, my daughter included. But if you vote for a third party, you run the risk of another 4 years of Obama. Can you live with that on your conscience? That's all I'll ask. I'm not putting you down for your belief. Support Gary Johnson. Support Ron Paul. I applaud you. Please know, and Whitney will vouch for me, so will Stacy if Patriot Char's listening. Patriot's a good friend of mine down there in Tomball, Texas. But her and I disagree on some candidates. But she's a strong conservative. But if you vote for anybody other than Mitt Romney in November and Barack Obama wins, you've only got yourself to blame. I mean, that's just the cold, hard truth. Stacy, wouldn't you agree with that?
Totally.
I'm with you. It's a vote against Obama.
There's no other choice. Aaron, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, I have a friend who is running for Congress in a district on Long Island, right? And he's running against a product of a very, very, very corrupt tax raising machine on Long Island, and the Conservative Party in Long Island left his name off the ballot, and they deleted the line for write-in. So if you wanted to write in, you didn't even see the space that gave you the option to write in on the Conservative line. And he still won the Conservative Party vote, and he came very close on the Republican Party. But he's running in a pretty liberal district, and he's got to decide. I don't know what he's going to decide. Whether he wants to challenge this guy, because the current congresswoman is, she's probably the number one Second Amendment proponent in the country. Her husband was killed in a shooting a number of years ago, and so it's tough.
Well, and it's a hard decision. Look, I understand people's passion better than anybody. I've had that passion twice this year. I had it for Herman Cain. And when Herman suspended, I thought, man, I'm not doing this again. I just don't know. I mean, I liked Rick, I liked Michelle, and I liked Newt. Those were my three second choices, if you will. I had the opportunity to be on phone calls private phone calls with a few other folks, half of the Tweetwee and some other folks that are out there in the chat room, with Senator Santorum, with Representative Bachman, and with Governor Perry. And Rick being last, and I, of course I know a whole lot about Newt, and I got to tell you, Newt was a hard one to pass up, man. Who could not resist the thought of Newt Gingrich up there on stage decimating Barack Obama?
It would
decimating.
Be fabulous.
I mean, it just I have to choose my words carefully. The dreams that it gives me, thinking about Newt Gingrich decimating Barack Obama. Okay.
Maybe we could have a surrogate debate, and we could still make it happen.
Yeah.
I'd love it. I'd love it. I went with Rick, though. Then Rick suspended, and Whitney, you know all about this. We've had that discussion before. The passion we have for our presidential candidates, if you do what we do, all of us on this phone call, all of us in the chat rooms, which, by the way, sorry, got to get this in. If you want to be a part of post-show chat, the post-show chat will be at www.traditionalamericanmovement.com. If you are not a member, I recommend you sign up now. Pull up a different tab on your Google screen there so you can listen to the show and sign up. Kurt, Fred, you know, the guys are all over there. They'll be able to get you approved pretty quickly. But if you want to be a part of the post-show chat, you need to be able to get into traditionalamericanmovement.com. Best website I have ever come across since the old Team Kane dashboard. With that said, I kind of lost my thought for a minute, ladies. Real quickly, I want to play a PSA, and then we're going to come back in out of that. Here's a little food for thought. Vice presidential nomination. I'm thinking it's going to be Rubio. I tell you a couple of people I wouldn't mind thinking about, though. Scott Walker of Wisconsin or John Kasich of Ohio. So let's play this PSA. We'll come back out of this PSA, which is a minute and 1 second, and let's talk about who our possible vice presidential nominee is going to be.
If you are a family making less than $250,000 a year, you will not see your taxes go up.
You will not see one dime's worth of tax increase.
Any form of tax increase.
The Supreme Court has upheld the requirement that every American buy health insurance.
Ruling that the mandate was a tax.
The mandate is a tax.
You either get insurance or you pay the tax.
Under this mandate, the government is forcing people to spend.
Sorry about that,
fine you if you don't. How is that not a tax?
Well, hold on a second, Georgia.
But it's still a tax increase.
That's not true, George. Absolutely not a tax increase.
The Supreme Court is saying that now you can implement this through a tax increase.
Is that a tax on me or is that not a tax on me? A moment ago you said there's no tax on me.
There aren't.
So that's not a tax. No.
Every single American has the right to affordable, accessible health care. And that should never be purchased with tax increases on middle-class families.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Here's what I want to know. Where did all of a sudden health care become a right? Okay, look, I'm not I'm a compassionate person, but do you have a right to take goods from somebody? You know, we used to call this theft at one time, when you took from people something that you didn't produce. So when has it become a right to take off of the sweat of the doctor his services? I don't understand this so-called right. Can anybody address that? And I want to pull Rick in here with us. Rick Bulow, my buddy, who's screening calls. Rick, you there?
Yes, I am, Michael. How are you today?
I'm good, Rick. Where did this become a right? How did it become a right? When did it become a right that someone who produces widget X, and I don't care what widget X is, when did it become a right to steal from that person their services?
I have no idea. But you know what? I mean, with the way the Democrats are, it's not surprising.
Well, yeah, Rick, that's interesting. I was just thinking as Michael said that,
and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but don't Congress and the president, don't they get to opt out of this anyway? Like, don't they not even have to participate? So if it was a right that all of us were supposed to have, wouldn't they be participating too?
Yeah, you would think, but...
Or did they decide that they had the right to choose and they're choosing something different? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Whitney, at least I think this is Whitney talking.
It is.
I mean, you know, I mean, basically, at least what I've been seeing is that Washington, D.C. has their rules, the rest of America has their rules, and, I mean, it's like Washington, D.C. doesn't want to play by the rules, you know, rather they want to take their ball and go home.
Well, right. you're absolutely right, and I think everybody on this panel, from Stacy, Aaron, you, Rick, Kurt, Danny, Whitney, I think we would all agree. So that anybody that's listening out there that's not within our Tea Party or 912 or grassroots circles understands, we're Tea Party conservatives, basically. Call it what you want. We're Tea Party conservatives, and we hold our own party as accountable
for
the fiasco and for what has happened. And I mean, let's be honest, guys. I know y'all all agree. I love me some George Bush. I love what he did after 9/11. I give him applause, but a fiscal conservative, he was not.
No.
Absolutely not.
And with that Congress and Senate before the Democrats took over, which made it even worse, our own people exploded the deficit. Our own party. And you know, we have to I combat that with people every day, my own family. They're like, "Well, what about your party?" Hey,
yeah.
Look, I'll be the first to tell you, my party screwed pooch on this thing. I mean, they did.
Oh, Michael.
You remember when Nancy Pelosi was on television, or there was a segment on her on the news, where she said that there really wasn't that much of a difference between the parties?
Say again, Stacey.
Do you remember when Nancy Pelosi was making a comment about how there really wasn't that much of a difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just how they wanted
George.
It?
Kurt, was that you? Were you trying to get in, or was that you, Aaron?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Aaron. I was just going to say George Soros made a similar comment in an interview. He said the only difference between Romney and Obama was the people Romney was going to bring in.
You guys go ahead and take it for just a minute. I got to step away from the computer and check my stove. I've got a rack of ribs in there that I'm slow roasting.
I hope
I'm caring. Hey, Michael, mail me some, please.
Yeah. Hey, y'all take it. Give me about 2 minutes.
Oh man, so bad. Yeah, and I don't mean to go back to what the conversation was. You know that. The flatcatch, who is now gone from the chat room, had postulated, but I had posited an editorial about how this election we're either all in for Romney or all in for Obama, and I dropped it in the chat room, and if you want, you can go to redredandblueusa.blogspot.com, which is my show page. And take a look at it from last week. And there was a video in there from Andrew Breitbart who basically said, if you're not in that bunker because you're not satisfied with that candidate, which in this case is Romney, more than shame on you, you're on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Danny's saying he's off of mute. Let's pull my brother Shouse in here real quick, if we can, panel.
Okay, and Michael, before you do, can I play that audio clip that I had told you about in the chat?
Yeah, how long is it, Rick?
It's about a minute 22 seconds.
Oh, a minute 22 is fine. I just didn't want to do another 8 minute segment.
No, not a problem. I know there's one.
Yeah, go ahead. Go
I
ahead
don't
and play.
Care
good one.
Who our candidate is, and I haven't since the beginning of this. I haven't. Ask not what the candidate can do for you. Ask what you can do for the candidate. We are there to confront them on behalf of our candidate. I will march behind whoever our candidate is, because if we don't, we lose. Because if we don't, we lose. Because if we don't, we lose. There are two paths. There are two paths. Black, white, gay, and straight. Anyone that's willing to stand next to me to fight the progressive left, I will be in that bunker. And if you're not in that bunker because you're not satisfied with this candidate, more than shame on you, you're on the other side. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, that man... Wow.
That is one hell of an audio clip. I mean, you know, just that minute 22 basically sums up this election. And like I said in my editorial last week, we need to save America, and the only one to do it is Romney. And the other vote this election is a vote for Obama, which is the same thing as a vote against America. As that clip shows, are you with us patriots and real Americans, or are you on the other side? Those of you who are fence-sitters, those of you who are just towing the line until you see who will come out of the convention, have to make your choice right now. Romney has a delegacy, so he is the nominee. And if you don't ask for Romney, then you ask for Obama. I mean, there is no room in the middle, no room on the fence, no room in the middle. It doesn't make sense.
Well, no, and that was the great Andrew Breitbart. For those of you that are listening that may not know, and Andrew Breitbart is pretty much the father of our social media, online, grassroots, this guy is the inspiration to us all. Wouldn't you agree, Whitney?
Absolutely. I think the great thing about Breitbart is he wasn't afraid to step on toes. He wasn't afraid to say the hard thing because he knew it was right, and he knew it helped, you know, further our goal. And he's definitely missed.
Well, he is. I mean, and he's the guy that has really given me the inspiration to be unapologetic about how I am. I mean, I still kind of, sometimes I feel like, you know, if I speak my mind, well, it happened just the other day. You know, I had written an editorial, and it was called America's Obituary. And the remark was, you know, what side of the Civil War would I had been on? Well, the implication there was that I was a racist. But I'm not a racist. I'm not a homophobe. You know, look, people are free to do what they want in the privacy of their bedroom. I'm not a racist. I believe in conservative principles. That is, lower taxes, less government involvement, and the opportunity to be successful. In my mind, those three things are neutral. They're colorblind. They're not. Those are not racist principles. Yet we conservatives are always accused of being racist when we talk about giving the people the opportunity to be successful. And I don't understand that. Brother Schaus, perhaps you can speak to that.
Oh, I was typing there. I didn't know you was going to bring me in so quick.
yep. Do that from time to time.
Yeah, see how you do me? But, yeah, Breitbart did a real good job of inspiring. And, I mean, it's really amazing how conservatives have taken over the social media aspects of this, because, I mean, like, something gets started on Twitter with a liberal hashtag and we take it over.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. We have, I was just talking to my brother-in-law the other day. I was talking again about this presentation I'm about to give next Monday. which, Gwen, I'd love for you to go if you get the opportunity to go. But we have. We, as Rick says, we now own the narrative in social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an open feed on my Twitter. I can see, you know, it's not, I see more than just the people I follow or that follow me. And I got to tell you guys what, I'm not seeing that much from people on the other side of the aisle. Are any of y'all?
I've been seeing a short few, but you know that's just it, like a minor bit from the other side.
Stacy, I know you're a bit. Stacy is another. I mean, Stacy tweets. I thought I tweeted a lot. I thought he tweeted a lot. I thought some of my other friends, Danny, tweeted a lot. This lady, she's a tweeter.
Nobody tweets more.
I'm obsessive.
I might have to follow her.
At Stacy in Texas, she is a tweet extraordinaire. She retweets people that she likes or follows or tweets something that she agrees with, and that's just a tenth of what she tweets. Stacy, are you seeing? I mean, don't you think that we conservatives have really taken over this? We got our butts handed to us on a silver platter in 08. But I believe we own the narrative now.
I agree. I see a whole lot of, granted, back before our candidate was chosen for us, there were a lot of people that would disagree and come in and out and making comments, and a lot from the liberal side as well, like trying to stir up some trouble. But overall, what I see is mainly conservatives, the right, especially the Tea Party, the grassroots. That's what I see the most. And I'm sorry, every time I hear Breitbart's name, I just get so sad I still miss him on. He was a highlight to watch his tweets and follow his thoughts of the day.
Yes, he was. He is missed. And to the, you know, the man was a year or two younger than me. He inspired, Stacy, he inspired so many of us to do what it is we do now. And, you know, look, we do this because we believe in our country. You're a mom. You want a better America for your country. Whitney's a mom. Rick, Danny is a dad and a grandfather. Kurt is a dad and a grandfather. You know, we all do what we do because we love our country so. But, you know, when you hear Ted say, yeah, I know who at Stacy in Texas is, or I know who at Cons Nation Radio is, I know who at Whitney Neal is, that means we're doing our job. And, I can't speak for you two or anybody else, but I know that my motivation and, you know, came from what I read and what I learned from Andrew.
I agree with you, and one of the things that's so unique about Andrew is he didn't just tweet, right? He didn't just put his message up. He sought out the people who he thought, you know, were wrong. And he would go into, you know, we all use the PSCNS, but he would go over to teachers. He would find them, and he would call them out for the ridiculousness. And he would have those arguments and speak those conversations. And I think that is what is so important about him and what is great about what we're doing. Like you said, we're not staying on our own timeline. We're not sticking with the people we follow and who follow us. We're seeking out other people, other places to share the message. It's awesome.
I was just looking for an email here I have with a link that I wanted to give everybody, speaking of Andrew. Now, this was written after Andrew died. It was from one of his, John Nolte over there. But if you'll go to Breitbart.com and look at, or just Google Twitter Conservatives War Essay. It's on Breitbart.com. Why Conservatives Must Join the Battle for America on Twitter. And this is one of the, it was just written on May 15th. It's one of the best articles I've read about the importance of Twitter and exactly what it is, Stacy and Whitney and me and Rick and Danny and everybody that tweets, I'm gonna read you guys if I can find it here while I'm chatting to fill up some time. I'll try to find it. He talks about how tweeting, the power of Twitter. He says, the first time I took the notice of the power of Twitter was when hundreds and perhaps thousands of everyday Americans completely dismantled the left-wing superior snark site Wonkette after the reprehensible publication viciously ridiculed Sarah Palin's youngest child, Trigg, who has Down syndrome. And he goes on and he talks about how this is the biggest thorn in the side of the media because all of us, you guys, us right here, and many more, what we do on Twitter is so vital that we're able to call the media out with the pure, overwhelming numbers of tweets when they make us mad that causes it to be, for the truth, to have the light shone on it. Somebody jump in there on that.
Yeah, I mean, I saw one. Parents, Newsbusters had something on Twitter that apparently Bill Maher said the other day that Palin should be thankful. It was something almost to the effect of Palin should be thankful that Obamacare is constitutional because when her kids get knocked up, she'll be covered. Or they'll be covered. And, I mean, just, you know, whatever you think about Obamacare and whatever you think about Sarah Palin, I mean, it's just so unbelievably obnoxious and, I mean, distasteful is too polite.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, we're starting to run down to the end of our show here. We got about 10 minutes left, and then I need to wrap up. So we're going to start at the top with Stacy, and then from Stacy to Whitney. And then after Whitney, I'll Rick, you'll be on deck after Whitney. So, Stacy, I'd like you to take whatever amount of time you need and give us your final thoughts about either Ted or the conversation today. Whatever you want to say, Stacy, this is your time. The floor is yours.
I would like to remind everyone how important it is to vote. Your voice is your vote. And I'd ask that everyone please, I mean, some people, I know it's surprising, some of us, but some people think they're registered and they're really not. For whatever reason, tomorrow is the last day. It is imperative. Texas needs your vote. So please go to www.texasvote.gov. Make sure that you're registered. Make sure that you know of the date for marks on your calendar for early voting for the runoff is July 31st through the 27th, and July 31st is D-Day. Please, I ask you to vote, and as a Ted Cruz supporter, I ask you to vote for Ted.
Absolutely, Stacy. Stacy, I'm going to park you for a few so you can hang out till the end of the show. Stacy, if you're not a member over at TradAm, that's traditionalamericanmovement.com. We're going to have some post-show over there, and I know that all of the folks that chat over there would love to be able to chat with you and Whitney and myself and Rick when we get done with the show today. So hang tight, buddy. Whitney, come on in here, my friend. I want to first thank Whitney. I want to tell you guys a little story, okay? Whitney, can I have a minute?
Oh, absolutely.
A friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, well, any of you that were on Team Kane will know this name, Maurice Atkinson, a good guy. I love Maurice and Moshe Startman. And Maurice had posted something, and I had responded. At the time, Rick was still in, Newt was still in. Whitney was a, I don't know how we define ourselves at this point, because I still get letters or emails as a team or a state leader for the Santorum campaign. But anyway, Whitney is a state leader for the Newt Gingrich campaign here in Texas. And Maurice had posted something, and I forget the details, and that's really insignificant. And I had responded, and Whitney said, well, just wait one moment, Michael. I'm here in Texas, and I'm working my ass off for Newt. And I responded, and this really great friendship blossomed from it. Two folks passionate about their candidate, and probably one of the best friendships ever could blossom. Her and my wife have become friends. We all went to the state convention together. We were both in the same Senate district. We sat together. We went and had lunch every day together. This is one great gal. I mean, so is, and as is Stacy, as is all of my friends. But this young lady I got the opportunity to meet and become friends with face-to-face after an incident on Facebook in which allowed our friendship to blossom. And Whitney, I got to say, we've become good friends, buddy.
We have, and I really value your friendship, and I so enjoyed meeting and getting to know your wife and hanging out with you at the convention. Being able to talk about some of the things we were running into at the convention and the platform was excellent, and I think it really shows how you, having been a Rick supporter, a hardcore Rick supporter, and myself for Newt, we were able to find that common ground and really come together on what matters most to us, and I think that's really important. And I love that we're able to have a spirited debate on things that we do disagree on, and then we still come back together and we say we're all doing this for the same purpose, which is fabulous.
Which isn't much, by the way, folks. There's other than our presidential candidates, I don't think there's anything we do disagree on.
I don't think there is, actually. You're right.
All right, buddy, the floor is yours. Take some time, wrap up with whatever it is you'd like to say, and then I'll park you, and we'll close out the show.
Well, I want to first echo what Stacy said about being registered and making sure that you yourself might be registered, but is your mom, is your neighbor, or your friend? You know, keep the conversation going out in public. We do a great job of it, like Michael said on Twitter, of putting out information. Even more importantly, like I just mentioned, is getting out there and finding other people, you know, carrying that conversation into places where it wouldn't normally happen, and bringing people into the conversation, not being afraid to have those spirited debates, because you never know, those friendships can come out of those conversations, and you can change somebody's mind. A lot of times we're dealing with people who all they get is what the mainstream media tells them. So they're sitting at home, they're watching the Dewhurst China ad, and they're thinking, oh my goodness, Ted Cruz is a communist. And he supports China, and he would rather send jobs to China than here in the United States, which we all know is couldn't be further from the truth, but that's all they hear. And so it's our job to get out there and make sure that we're setting the record straight in every opportunity that we have to do it. And, we will find, because we've found that each person on this call has had it happen to them where you've talked to somebody and you've changed their mind. And hopefully they're going to go do the same thing. Once they've heard you, they've heard the facts, they've heard the truth, they feel your passion, they're going to go do the same thing somewhere else. So just don't be afraid to have those conversations, because that's what's really going to pay off for us in July 31st, and in November.
Absolutely. And I just want to echo, I want to echo what you're saying about listening to those ads and changing, we're not going to change everybody's mind, and we're not going to, even Whitney and I don't agree on absolutely everything. My buddy Beck and I, my buddy Rick and I, I'm sure there's something at stake. I've got a good friend down in Tomball, Patriot Char. She's not a Ted Cruz supporter, but we have mutual respect for one another, and the key is respect.
Mm-hmm.
The key is respect. So, Whitney, I want to thank you so much, sweetie. You're a blessing to have I count you as a blessing, as a friend in my life. And I'm just so glad that that we've gotten to know one another, and I know Angela's happy that she's gotten to know you, and I really thank you for doing this show with us today. It's just been tremendous.
It has. I feel the same way, and I sincerely thank you for the opportunity to be on today. It has been a wonderful experience.
Thanks, buddy. Stand by so you can hear the end, because I'm sure you want to hear my parting words.
I do.
All right, buddy. Rick, and then Kurt, you're up on deck. Rick, parting words.
I mean, all I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, is if we don't I mean, you know, this past Thursday, the Supreme Court had left us no choice. If we want to repeal Obamacare, we need to repeal Barack Obama. The only way to do that is by electing Mitt Romney, and since now Roberts had said that it only takes 51 to repeal Obamacare because he said it's a tax, we need to get conservative and Republican senators in. And Danny Shouse had posted a couple of them in the chat, and he had forgotten one. Down here in Florida, right now, Connie Mack IV is going up against Wild Bill Nelson, so we need to support Nelson, or we need to support Mack as well.
All right, that's my buddy, the rock star, Rick. Mm-hmm. Real quickly, give us your time and day and time, and of course the call-in number for all of the shows on Conservative Nation Radio shows, which is Women Patriots on Tuesdays, Obama Nation on Thursdays, and then Rick on Saturdays, me on Sundays. We do have a student show, but they're on summer break. Rick, give us the details on yours real quick.
Well, my show is called Red, Red, and Blue, and it's on every Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Also, we're simulcast on ownthenarrative.com, so you can also go to ownthenarrative.com/live as well if you want to check that out. Also, go to On the Narrative anyway, you know, because there are a lot of good shows as well as a lot of good bloggers on there. So just, yeah,
absolutely.
I can't sing
the praises for On the Narrative. Justin Kendall over there, those guys have a great website. I don't get over there as much as I would like to because I have some things going on with my own stuff and with my traditionalamericanmovement.com. But I am very appreciative to Own the Narrative for what they do for Conservative Nation radio shows. They do simulcast, I think, all but one of our shows, and I think we're working on that one, Rick. I don't know.
Yeah, I know that on Tuesdays, most of them go over to listen to Kira Davis, so I don't know if they simulcast Women Patriots or not. And I know that you had mentioned the Sunday show, or should I say, the student show as well. And since they're on break, I don't think that they're simulcasting them anyway. But it would be good to talk to Justin about that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, buddy. Sit tight. And as always, Rick, you are a rock star on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm just amazed at your numbers. And Kurt, you're up. Aaron, you're on deck. Kurt, parting words, my friend.
Hey, Michael. The only thing I'm going to say is just, you know, you keep rocking with Ted down there in Texas, and up here in Tennessee, the Zach Pack is on the prowl. The Zach Pack is hunting Bob Corker, and we're going to bring him down.
All right. You know, y'all have my support from down here in Hazlett at Patriot Studios. I'll do the best that I can to help my brothers and sisters up there in Tennessee. Kurt, thank you as always for being a part of the show. I'm going to park you in I, my brother, will see you in the chat room here shortly. Aaron, you're up. Danny, you're on deck.
Oh, I would just want to echo what Stacey and Whitney said about making sure to register to vote and about networking and not being afraid to engage people. I mean, for, you know, all of the comments of all of the people that are, you know, that have been very nervous about Mitt Romney, unfortunately, he's what we've got. And so because he's what we've got, it makes electing people like Ted Cruz all the more important, because you got to have people to keep, as we've seen over the last several years, you don't just need people to fight the Democrats. You need people to keep Republicans honest. And so we have to have people to keep Republicans honest. So you got to register to vote. You got to get out to vote on July 31st. You have to vote early as possible. And you got to bring friends. You got to bring. It's not just enough for yourself to go vote. You got to bring your friends and neighbors and lots of them. And so that's what I would say. That would be my comment.
All right. And Aaron, it's nice to get to make your acquaintance. Thank you so much for friending me on Facebook. I look forward to doing battle with you, my friend. I'm going to park you so you can hear the end of the show. Buddy, if you're not a member of traditionalamericanmovement.com, I urge you to join up so you can be a part of the post-chat show. I know everybody would love to get the opportunity to get to know you. You seem like a really good guy. Brother Schaus, folks, I think of the panel even including Rick, who I've known for a long time, I want to close the show with my last panelist, who's been very instrumental early on in my getting into the grassroots movement when I joined Team Kane. He was one of the first to reach out to me, and I don't know, I guess maybe, I don't want this to sound braggish, but perhaps you might say, see some potential in me and encourage me. And that's my brother Schaus from up in Kentucky. What say you, brother? I'm sorry I didn't get you a little more on air time, but I'm so glad that you're with me every week and that you're my brother in more ways than everybody probably knows. What are your final thoughts?
Well, thank you for the kind words, and also I'd like to let everyone know that my Senator Rand Paul brought up a bill for the Senate to, or a point of order for the Senate to follow the rules and read the legislation before they voted on it, and he was voted down 77-22.
Well, now tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that was what I got in the headlines. I didn't get to get real deep into it, but I mean, just reading it on the surface, that the point of order to follow the rules and read the legislation sounds like stuff they should probably do.
Well, I was going to say you're absolutely right, and because this was news to me, I'd kind of missed that. But I think Senator Rand Paul might be on to something there with wanting them to follow the rules, Brother Schaus. I mean, I don't know. You and I understand following the rules is, I don't know, you know, I find it kind of amazing that Senator Paul would, I'm glad that he did, but isn't it intriguing that he's got to remind them, hey, we need to follow the rules.
And read the legislation.
Yeah. Yeah, unlike Nancy Pelosi says, we need to pass it before we know what's in it.
Yeah, if I'd read it first, I might have seen it wasn't tax.
Brother Schaus, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. You going to be on over at Tradam?
No, I'm going to have to get to work here.
All right, brother. Well, we'll be touching base with you, and thanks for all that you do for the Tea Party and for the various 18 or 20 senators that you work so diligently for. I think is it 18 or 20?
I don't know. I gotta do a recount.
All right, my brother, I'm gonna park you and finish this show up.
All right, great show, Michael.
Thank you, bro. Folks, this has been Soldiers of Patriotism Ted Cruz special. And it couldn't happen without my great panelists today, Aaron, Rick, Kurt, Danny, and my two co-hosts, my buddy from East Texas, Stacy M., and my buddy from just a little bit north of me in Denton, Whitney Neal. They really do work their butts off in the cause of liberty. And if ever there's two ladies that you want to extend the hand of friendship to and become friends with on Facebook or on Twitter, it's both of them. They're great ladies, and to both of you, thank you so much for helping me with the show today. Earlier in the week, well, on Thursday at about 9:30 Central Standard Time, with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, I wrote the United States of America's obituary, and that's what I'm going to close my show with today. Now, keep in mind, it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but with any sarcasm, there's always a grain of truth to it. The United States of America, the 4th of July, 1776, to the 29th of June, 2012. June 28th, 2012, after suffering liberal indoctrination syndrome, LIS, over the last 30 years, United States of America has succumbed to the illness at 9 a.m. this morning. Known to most by her nickname America, USA was born on the 4th of July, 1776. She would have been 236 years old next Wednesday on the 4th. There will be no services as the secularists have successfully taken God out of American society many years ago. America had a long, full life. She saw the American Revolution at birth. She suffered a civil war from 1860 to 1864. She stood to help the old country in World War I and World War II in the early part of the 20th century. She fought fiercely in the 1950s and 60s to stop the radical progression of communism, which ultimately was the cause of her demise. When the 1960s radicals finally gained control of her government and started imposing business-killing regulations in an attempt to redistribute the wealth. The final blow came in 2008 when an unknown leftist radical gained control of the executive branch and unilaterally started usurping her constitution. Donations can be sent to www.tedcruz.org, www.zachpostkovich.com, and mittromney.com. This has been Soldiers of Patriotism. I want to thank you all for joining me. Patriots, there is no turning back.
Bourgeois town.